Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 93-year-old Bob Allenby of Newman, California, originally from Ukiah in Northern California. He joined the Navy in 1942, and after some time in a secret squadron developing unmanned drone technology, he headed to the Pacific with VPB-20, a squadron in which he'd be flying aboard PBM Mariner seaplanes.
We headed to the Pacific from Banana River, Florida, which is Cape Canaveral now. We flew to San Diego. We flew to Alameda for some gunnery training. Flew to Kaneohe Bay in Hawaii, and then flew over to the South Pacific to an island called Tawi Tawi. And then we started our patrols. And for a country boy, it's absolutely mind-boggling to see how primitive the world really is in areas like the South Pacific, Borneo, Tawi Tawi, the Philippine Islands, the war aside, seeing the submerged atolls, huge 20-foot sharks, turtles 4 or 5 feet in diameter swimming around in this water that you can see 100 feet below the surface. And when you're looking for submarines or enemy ships or enemy whatever, you see all this stuff because our patrols would last from 8 to 13 hours, and we would be flying 500 to 1,000 feet off the water, and we could see every single thing. And I'm still amazed to this day, something a lot of people didn't realize back in those days. We realized there were still cannibals in the world, and I was exposed to that very closely.
Well, I can't let you get away with saying that without some more explanation. Where and what did you see?
This is, a tragic and interesting story, but one of our planes was shot down, and the plane went down to the ocean. And the only reason I knew about it at the time was that one of my friends came aboard the ship that they rescued. His right arm was gone except for the bone. A shark had attacked him. Well, we sent out a crew to find the rest of the crew. These are 11-man crews on our planes.
Which is a PBM.
Which is a PBM-5 at that time, yes. Mm-hmm. And they went into Borneo. They knew where they went ashore. They saw where they went, and the thing they ran into, first of all, was this village of natives, which they discovered were cannibals. No, they never saw anybody. Never heard, no. We knew differently. I wasn't there, but our crew knew differently because the telltale signs were there that these crewmen had been there. They never did find them. Tragic story that you never hear about in World War II.
And you mentioned 11-man crew. So explain to us your role on that crew.
Well, I was a flight engineer, and my job was to make sure that everything was mechanically okay for flight and to troubleshoot problems. And the plane was a very, very excellent aircraft. It had huge, huge fuel tanks. We had 36 different combinations that we could run on our control panel. And in all my years of flying, engine-wise, we never had a problem with that plane. And we also went through an incredible experience flying from Guam to Okinawa. We flew through a typhoon that was so powerful we couldn't fly more than 100 feet off the water, which was foam, nothing but foam. And the wind was so turbulent, the plane was almost out of control. We lost a cowling off of one of our engines, but the plane got us there. So it was pretty strong.
What are you doing inside that plane when that's going on outside the plane? Are you sweating bullets? Are you thinking this is it? Never going to see the wife again? What are you thinking?
We really felt we were never going to make it because we were sideways up and down, and we were just incredible. I was on the flight engineers panel, and my job was to make sure that everything was working, but it was beyond our control. It was controlled by Mother Nature, and we were victims of Mother Nature, and we have to hand it to the plane and our pilot for being able to control it and get us back to now. The irony of this story is we got back to Okinawa, where we were. 2 days later, we were in the bay where all these airplanes, there were 50 or 60 airplanes, PB-4Ys, PBMs, everything you could think of, ships. The typhoon hit the bay we were in. They took us ashore before the winds hit. The following day, there was not one airplane left in that bay. They were totally destroyed by 160-mile-an-hour winds, this typhoon. We lost destroyers out at sea, cruisers, 100-foot waves, terrible tragedy. But the following day, my plane captain and I decided we wanted to find our plane and take some of our stuff off of it. And we were walking down the road, and this Jeep came along, stopped, picked us up. I sat in the front seat. I looked over, and I thought, I know that guy. It was Tyrone Power, who happened to be a captain in the Marine Corps. Tyrone Power on Okinawa picked us sailors up. Yeah, he was as good-looking in that Jeep as he was on the movies. But we did find our plane, and we rescued some things off of it. Yeah. But it was destroyed.
So you got some of your belongings, or did you grab a little piece of the plane to take home?
We got our belongings, but we always we took some things that we knew we would have for memorabilia afterwards. What they did with the planes, I don't know, because shortly after that, the war was over where the bomb was dropped, and we were over. And then we were sent back to Guam and Hawaii.
Now, I've seen some of your records, and there's commendations and citations in there, and three times you're awarded the Air Medal every five missions you flew. You got another Air Medal or the cluster in lieu of it. So what were those missions like? Are you looking for submarines? Are you looking for downed pilots? What were the majority of your missions like?
We weren't looking for submarines particularly because we knew there weren't too many in the area, but we were primarily looking for Japanese installations, aircraft hiding and boats hiding and things of that sort. One of the missions we flew by a village, and I saw something in the overhang from the ocean that looked like it shouldn't belong there. And we flew by a couple of times, and then we came back, and I was a starboard waist gunner, and I opened fire on them, and I'd come to find out there were some barges the Japanese had hidden under there, and we destroyed those. And things of that sort. We were looking for all kinds of things that they had left behind. Also have one other interesting story about one of our missions that we did. There were three Australian commandos that had been stationed on this island off of Borneo. And they were actually there for weeks or months. I don't know exactly how long. And their job was to spot Japanese ships and aircraft and report them to the Americans. It was a very isolated, dangerous life for diseases and things of that sort. Well, they had been there so long, they developed serious diseases, beriberi, things of that sort. And we were commissioned to go out and rescue them. And we went out and landed offshore. I pedaled in our boat, but we got them back aboard plane, and we took off and brought them back to our seaplane tender. And that was one of the most satisfying things I did that I can remember. These poor men were skin and bones from illnesses, but they were as hard and tough. I always admire the Australians at that point, being exposed to them. Those are the kind of things we did. We patrolled South China Sea all the way up to Okinawa, and on Okinawa we were patrolling, getting ready for the invasion before the bombs were dropped. And that was the scariest part because we knew that we were never going to get back if we had to invade Japan. But let's say it made a nervous wreck of all of us.
Well, and I want to come back to that, but something else just occurred to me. With me asking you all these questions about what you were doing in the Pacific, does it feel at all like deja vu? Has this happened before in your life?
No, this is the first time that I've had a chance to really go over all the things that I've been talking about today.
No, it's not. You did it on the radio during World War II. We've got hard proof of this.
Well, I know, but not to the extent. Not to the extent. I was interviewed on my plane off of Borneo down in Tawi Tawi. A reporter requested that I answer some questions. And I have the 78 RPM record that the Navy sent to my wife to prove to her that I was still out there kicking around. And I answered a lot of questions, a lot of them very similar to this. But you have to remember the difference. Everything in those days was secret. And I could only say things in generalities. I couldn't say specifics like I can today in this interview and become more detailed than I could at that time.
Well, let's do this. Let's listen to that recording, since you still have it, from way back when. And then we'll see what further details we need to pull out.
Speaking to you from somewhere in the Philippine Islands, where he's serving 7th Fleet Aircraft, here is the voice of a man from California. Give us your name, please.
Bob Allenby, aviation machinist, mate, 3rd class, United States Navy.
And where is your home?
Menlo Park, California. Street address, 1309 Mill Street.
How long have you been in the Navy, Bob?
3 years.
Tell us what you do out here in the Pacific.
I'm flying in a PBM Martin Mariner Patrol Squadron.
And what's the job of your squadron?
Our squadron is to keep gasoline and shipping from Japanese-held China coast, Indochina, to their homeland.
I see. And what else do you do?
We fly Black Cat and Dumbo. Black catting is that we take off in the evening, fly 12 or 14-hour hops over the China coast and along Formosa and Indochina.
Mm-hmm.
Dumbo, we go out, follow strikes, raids, and invasions, picking up whatever pilots are down during the operation.
Well, that's good work. Where all have you been out here?
I've covered the Borneo invasion, Bruni Bay, Balikpapan, Tarakan, Tawi Tawi, China coast, and Formosa.
Well, Bob, from all that action, is there some particular mission you've had which stands out in your mind?
Yes, I believe the most important is one day we took off on a sub-search and convoy coverage. We went out about 5 hours from our base when we developed a fire in our plane. We had to land, and it was very rough that day. We pulled over to the Borneo coast about a mile off of Japhel Island, sat our plane down. As soon as we were on the water, we went to work, manned our turrets, and fixed our discrepancy. During this time, the Japanese opened fire on our plane. We did our best to keep them off. They sent boats out. We repelled their attacks. During this time, we fixed our discrepancy and took off. We got back to our base without being hit.
Well, you sound a little different now, Bob. It's only been, what, 73 years since then?
Yeah, and I think maybe I'm getting a little bit hoarse because I've spent an awful lot of time talking, and I enjoy that when I'm with interesting people.
I think you sound great. I like that baritone.
Well, I said that because I was hoping that's what you would answer me by.
Well, and so we heard a very young Bob Allenby saying hello to his family, his wife back home in California. And they actually heard that on the radio or not till they got the recording?
Yes, they actually heard that. And my wife received the record, the actual 78 record from the Navy. And but they heard it on the radio. And of course, I didn't know it at the time because I was still over in the Pacific.
And you told us before we listened to that, that in that interview all those years ago, you had to kind of downplay what you were doing because you couldn't say too much. So tell us the real story. You did hint at a little gun battle with the Japanese there. What's the story about that mission?
There was another one also on our first mission down there. We saw some Japanese coming down a river, Borneo, in a boat. There again, I was a starboard gunner, and I had a chance to fire at them. I didn't hit them at that time, and they ran into the jungle, and so we just prayed that area where they are, so we never knew whether we hit them or not. But anyway, we thought we were doing what we were sent out there to do, is to destroy the enemy. And then the firefight that we had on the island off of the Philippines.
Yeah, so what we heard on that recording was you guys, you're not in the air, right, when this is happening?
That was the time we were rescuing the Australians from Borneo. And because we were close to the island, we were on our plane in the open sea, they were firing at us. The Japanese were firing at us and you know, with their machine guns and so forth and so on, while we were trying to take the Australians off the island to get them aboard our plane. And then we took off, and fortunately, we were not hit. And I don't know how far away the Japanese were firing at us, but they were firing at us, and we took off and rescued them, and nobody was injured.
I mean, that makes it sound pretty straightforward and simple, but I bet it didn't feel that way when they're shooting at you, and you're hoping and praying that they don't get you before you can get off the surface.
There's an old saying that when you feel the hair on the back of your head, those are called, yes, I know what that feeling's like. But, you know, there's one thing that's different about it. When you're actually involved at that time, there was no fear. There was nothing except get these people, get out of here. We're not going to be hurt. We're going to do this and it's going to be a success. Then when you get back to your ship or your base, you are scared to death and trembling and shaking and looking for a glass of wine or a shot or something, or looking up to heaven to thank somebody. But yes, you're not afraid at the time. And any time we were involved in combat or danger, there was no fear. It's after it's over with that the fear sets in. And I think that's just human nature, thank God.
Well, we're not done yet with the close calls Bob experienced in the Pacific. When we come back, the discovery that he made just in the nick of time to help his PBM avoid what would have been a devastating plunge into the ocean. Check out the photos and video of Bob at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Effler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.